This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. In your outings, rare though they may be these days, have you seen any autonomous cars on the road yet? Some of them are being tested on Michigan roads, although the pandemic has slowed that down a bit, and much more is on the way. You may have heard that Ford is redeveloping its Corktown campus in the heart of Detroit with much work specifically devoted to new ways of driving and new ways in which cars exist in our world. Everything's changing between new technologies in the auto industry to changing feelings about sharing rides during a pandemic. The state of Michigan has appointed a chief mobility officer to help us think through all the things that might be shifting as our ways of getting around change. Trevor Paul comes to this work from the world of economic development, which doesn't really happen without people, goods, and services moving around. And he joins us now. Trevor Paul, welcome to Stateside.
It is great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So how have you been thinking about your mandate in this new position and the things that you want to do?
Yeah, so this next decade is going to be a big decade for mobility in the future of transportation. And 2030 will be a big year. Electric vehicles are expected to pass gas-powered vehicles by 2030. Software will represent more than 50% of the value of a vehicle by 2030. Self-driving vehicles are expected to take off in the late 2020s, with over half of vehicle production being partially autonomous. So by the end of the decade, a car may be able to park itself, drive on the highway by itself. So there's just a lot of change. And so our governor, Governor Whitmer, believes that the future, you know, isn't something tomorrow's leaders just enter. It's something that today's leaders create. And knowing how much mobility is going to change and how important mobility is to the economy of the state, we felt that this office, the Office of Future Mobility and Electrification, and my role as Chief Mobility Officer was a good way to have a dedicated resource to chart some goals over the next decade and hit those goals.
Right.
So we're focused on everything from, like I mentioned, self-driving vehicles, electrification, the future of multimodal travel. So not just passenger vehicles, and also even the future of drones. There are a lot of different things that I think can improve safety and also improve our way of just simply getting around here in the state.
One of the latest developments in this sphere is the announcement from Governor Whitmer and state officials about plans for a dedicated lane for autonomous vehicles on this 40-mile stretch of highway between Detroit and Ann Arbor. How big a deal is this?
It's huge. I mean, it's the road of the future. There's nothing else like it in the world. And frankly, it was good to finally announce it after months of working on it. So this road will be dedicated for self-driving vehicles, but really it'll be for the people of Michigan. We want to, with this road, improve access to safer, cleaner, and more equitable travel. The road itself, I mean, while the route's still predetermined, so we're entering, after the announcement, we're entering into a phase one, which will last 24 months, where we're going to think about the route, roadway design, the different cases that could be tough to deal with. So what if, let's say the lane is dedicated, but it's along a curb, how does an ambulance pull over or a delivery truck pull over? These are difficult questions that we need to make sure that we have answered in the right way. But ideally, we're thinking Detroit to Dearborn to DTW to Ypsilanti and up to Ann Arbor. And how we get there, I mean, it could be on the highway. It could be surface streets. We'll have to figure that out.
Are there things that you can work out around mobility in, I guess, the middle America environment that we live in Michigan that maybe can't be workshopped to quite such an effective degree in a bigger city environment or on the coasts?
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is if the learning that happens in Michigan is really applicable nationwide.
Oh, I mean, 100%. I would say worldwide. Metro Detroit looks a lot like Metro Atlanta, looks a lot like Metro Houston. What we lack in density, we have an overabundance of use cases, or we have opportunities, whether it's rural environments, suburban environments, wide lanes that ultimately kind of narrow to main streets and then widen again. I think what's important to remember here is that this corridor will be, yes, a mode for passengers to travel, but also we have to think about the mobility of goods and logistics. And so I think, Michigan is a place, especially with its all-weather conditions, that can be a beacon for other states in terms of looking at what new technologies can be deployed to help people get around, to provide safer, greener, and also transportation that upholds a person's dignity. And that's something that we'll be thinking about. How do we make sure that this actually integrates into existing transit options? That's very important.
Yeah, there's some pretty obvious reasons why Michigan is one of the places where this kind of development is happening right now, given our history with the auto industry. But an awful lot of projects in the mobility space are also coming out of Silicon Valley. Is Michigan in a position to compete with what's happening there?
Absolutely. I guess we should sort of level set and timestamp this question and answer. I mean, COVID has changed that landscape a bit. And, you know, we believe that the sort of the dispersion of high paying tech jobs during the pandemic is going to cause there not to be another Silicon Valley 2.0 ever or for a really long time. So I want to say that now we are not looking, and we really never were looking to be the next Silicon Valley here in Michigan. We want to partner with them where our software prowess leaves off, theirs picks up. Where their hardware prowess leaves off, ours picks up. But when you look at what Michigan offers right now and compare it to California, I mean, human capital is more expensive in California. A software engineer's average salary in California is over $134,000 compared to $91,000 here in Michigan. You think about our university systems, UC system has a great network of different universities, but none really specialize in automotive research. And even when you look at like business environments and tax environments, Michigan is more favorable. So while we're looking to partner with them, we're not looking to compete or be the next Silicon Valley. I think there are definitely strengths that Michigan has as it relates to attracting some of these tech companies, not only around the future of transportation, but also the future of manufacturing.
I'm sure that many people who may be catching us on podcast from the West Coast are delighted to hear that West Coast monster real estate booms may be a thing of the past, but remains to be seen. We already know that the old model for building a car's drivetrain is not really a part of the next generation of electric and hybrid vehicles. They don't run the same way. They're not built the same way. And as part of that, they don't require as many workers to produce. Do you have any priorities in working with the auto industry to prepare for the changes or in working with Michigan's workforce for that eventuality?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts on that. So nationally, Boston Consulting Group and the Michigan Mobility Institute did a bit of research a while back that had said the mobility industry in the U.S. will need about 45,000 new people with computer-related engineering skills by 2030. And Michigan will actually need 12,000 of those people to retain its pole position as a global mobility leader. The shift to autonomous and electrified transportation will be significant, and it will impact the traditional automotive workforce. Automation will cause some changes, but there'll also be some new jobs that are created, potentially higher paying jobs, as it relates to the maintenance of these new vehicles and the infrastructure around them. So our focus has really been, okay, you know, how do we retain homegrown talent? That is a big deal. Right now, Michigan's graduating more folks looking at tech than they are actually adding, or we are adding tech jobs. So I think there's a couple ways to look at that. Reskilling. So being able to look at the existing traditional automotive workforce and prepare them for the business models of tomorrow, and then upskilling. So making sure that if there are folks that are doing some great work, they have the capability to do more. So if someone's, for instance, helping with cleaning the technology, the LiDAR, the radar that helps a car understand its surroundings and drive itself, what else can they be doing in the field to add value? And then the last thing is, you know, we fundamentally believe that startups enrich a state's workforce. So right now, Michigan is the second highest receiver of VC funds to mobility and electrification startups, but that's still just a tenth of California. Often startup founders that focus on software will get educated here and then leave or take their ideas elsewhere to get funds. I think we need to create a stickier environment to keep those individuals as they come up with their ideas at university. And ultimately, they end up here. They end up staying here and growing here.
Detroit's Office of Mobility Innovation has been doing some interesting work right now. They've been providing e-bikes and scooters to essential workers and area hospitals and grocery stores to help them get around and get things to people that are needed. Does Detroit have some specific things to offer as you get your work in your office in gear?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm not sure I talked to anyone else more than I do Mark De Laverne, who's the chief mobility officer for Detroit. We work very closely together. We worked very closely together on the self-driving vehicle corridor. I really believe in what the city's approach is around micromobility. So micromobility is all of these different other modes of transportation, like e-bikes and e-scooters. They could have, you know, when the Bird scooters just dropped on corners, bird droppings, I guess you could call them, 6, 7, 8 scooters on a corner just showed up. I remember walking to work being like, what? Someone left their scooters. Someone's going to take these. But over time, the city said, all right, let's try this. Let's see, you know, what are some of the cases that we need to create some protocol or some restrictions around. And let's see if they actually do help people get around where maybe there wasn't as dynamic of a bus route for someone to get to work. Now that person has a scooter. And since then, I think Detroit has really been breeding ground or playground for safe deployments of technology. What you're seeing now, and some of these scooter companies really have been having a difficult time staying above water. Part of it is they tried to sell to many cities and the cities just weren't ready to make a big investment in scooters yet. And part of it was just consumer adoption. Just people weren't ready to overly rely on these things. But now what you're seeing is some of these scooter companies and even like Uber, they're integrating into a city's existing platform as a service. And I think that's where we're all going. I think eventually everyone's going to have a subscription service that's going to allow them to get a scooter, maybe an e-rickshaw, a pod, a self-driving vehicle, or something else in a span of minutes, where then maybe it makes sense not to own a vehicle. But then on the flip side, hopefully that happens long enough into the future where the auto companies are able to pivot and actually be the ones providing these subscriptions and are able to sustain themselves over time. So it's going to be beyond 2030. It's going to be a very exciting 40 years for the future of transportation, 40, 50 years.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Trevor Paul. He was named this year as Michigan's Chief Mobility Officer. Trevor, does the conversation around mobility in the 21st century have to be limited to Michigan's bigger cities?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it can't be. I mean, I think the innovation can start in a city. There are opportunities to perfect how a vehicle talks to an intersection inside a city that then can be transferred to West Branch, Michigan, or Alpena, Michigan. What's important early on is that we understand both government officials focused on transportation, also the companies with the innovations, how helpful these new technologies can be. The last thing we want to do is introduce tech for tech's sake. And what cities in Detroit and Southeast Michigan is able to do is create that narrative for us so we understand the variables. So for instance, if we're going to use artificial intelligence to make an intersection safer for pedestrians crossing the street as well as vehicles, there's no better place to test it than in a place like Detroit or Royal Oak or Birmingham. Ultimately, if we can get that to work, ultimately over time, the costs go down to run services like that, and we know what to do with that data once we collect it, then it makes it very affordable for a place like Alpena or Mackinac or Monroe to then use. And those are just examples of like how you translate big city tech to small town tech. There's a whole world of rural activity.
Yeah, I feel like one of the first places I saw business actually embracing autonomous vehicles was in agriculture. Weeders and crop thinners. I know MSU has a robotics lab that works on some of this stuff. Is there enough, you know, awareness of this within state agricultural circles in Lansing that you've got people to talk to about this?
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm glad you brought up Weeders because we actually worked to connect a Michigan company to a tech company doing autonomous weeders. And now that Michigan company and that California company are working together. MSU has really been a leader on this front. Frankly, I think it's as much about what happens on farms as it is about the distribution of the food. I think mobility's biggest possible advantage for rural communities that are, let's choose farming, that are reliant on farming, isn't necessarily how automation can help them on their own property. It's how automation can give them more access to the market. I think you can look at it from, okay, autonomous trucking is taking off right now. People that used to invest in robo-taxis are now shifting gears, pivoting into the future of freight and how leveraging connected, shared, self-driving and even electrified technologies can change things. And that's where rural America is going to see a transformation. All of a sudden, it's going to be a lot easier to get your product where it needs to be to potentially double sales over a period of time. pay your employees, support your family, support your community. That's how mobility can help.
What else in our very car-oriented society needs rethinking right now? Are there ways in which our very cities might look different as the move toward autonomous and electric moves forward?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Where do I get started?
What kind of spaces that are very car-oriented right now might change?
Oh, the air. The air above us is about to change in a huge way. Michigan has a chance to lead in commercial drones, and commercial drones are coming. Hmm. In fact, commercial drones, both ground and aerial, so people think drones, they think aerial, it's ground too, are expected to account for 80% of consumer goods deliveries by 2026. And you look at what Amazon, they bought a company, it didn't make too much news, but they bought a company called Zooks that focuses on autonomous or self-driving systems. And they're going to leverage Zooks to potentially shave off up to $20 billion over a span of time in delivery costs. And it's going to be because of drones, that sort of autonomous technology. Not necessarily that a drone is going to be, you know, flying from Grand Rapids to Detroit to deliver a package, but the drone is an extension of the delivery truck. And sort of this notion of last mile delivery is going to be revolutionized. And you're seeing it during the pandemic, where you have a company out of Ann Arbor like Refraction delivering groceries, a robot slowly moving down the street, delivering your Oreo cookies and your lunch meat. And there are other companies around the country and the world that are focused on that. And in Michigan, I mean, we have all the pieces to be a drone force, but yet we rank in the bottom half of being a commercial drone friendly state. So one of the things our office is going to be focusing on is creating more favorable environments for that technology, but also making sure that it doesn't intrude on people's daily lives.
I've seen some futurists suggesting that really the place to start thinking about right now is urban planning. You know, do we need the same kind of parking lots that we have right now? Do we need the same kind of streetscapes that we have right now? If, say, when you go out to run an errand, your car drops you off and then comes and gets you when you're finished with what you're doing. What can and should the state be doing to encourage urban planning that looks ahead?
Well, I mean, there's really two aspects to this. I mean, there's how we move and how our goods move to us was going to change anyway. But now you have the COVID impact of planning, from how you design your city buses to how you design your sidewalks and your curbs for delivery.
Well, do you consider that a long-term prospect, or might things go back to the way they were within a year and a half or so?
You know, that's a really good question. I think in some cases it is not a long-term. I don't think we all want to live around plexiglass dividers the rest of our lives. But I do think that plexiglass dividers in a bus, for example, is a nice placeholder for higher level, less invasive technologies to integrate into the market. I'll give you an example. We funded a company, that's actually a Grand Haven, Michigan company, to work on new ultraviolet light technologies equipped with these tube lights that are used to sort of disinfect the area inside an autonomous shuttle. Cleans the air, cleans the surfaces, and you wouldn't even know it. And so their technology is actually being deployed on the autonomous shuttle route for that May Mobility is running in Grand Rapids, which is currently the longest in the country. So I think that some of these advanced technologies, once you're able to get them in a place where they can be mass, I think that's what you're going to see replace things like dividers. That said, going back to the other thing that you brought up, it triggered a thought. I think what is going to stay is the loosening of these permitting rules, these rules that don't allow, for instance, restaurants have outdoor seating, or for instance, a Starbucks that maybe was on a busy street didn't have an area for someone to park and pick up their delivery. Detroit has been very good about loosening those permitting, and so have other cities as well. The other thing I think you're going to see with urban planning is expanded cycle lanes and walking routes. So cities that are leading right now, leading the world, are like Brussels closed roads and added about 40 kilometers of bike lanes in a span of weeks. Paris is adding about 650 kilometers of lanes, all sort of as we speak and by the end of the year. Oakland actually shut down 10% of their streets for walking and cycling lanes. So I think what you're going to see is streets are going to become a less car-heavy place to move around. In some ways, the roads and the streets, that space between buildings, it's going to return to humans.
Just one last question, Trevor. We sort of got at this, but I wonder if you're worried about the extent to which the pandemic is going to affect the momentum that a lot of mobility conversations have been, I guess, enjoying in recent years. If companies like Ford and FCA, you know, get hit hard for a sustained period of years, will they be able to, you know, keep putting their best efforts into the technology? Will the rest of us, you know, and other companies that are developing new forms of mobility, are we really going to be able to keep up with the rest of the world?
Yes, I do think that we are going to be able to keep up with the rest of the world. But you have to acknowledge the fact that Ford delayed its autonomous vehicle services until 2022. Rivian, a hot new EV company, canceled its new EV partnership. So big companies are canceling and delaying things. Uber, Lyft have delayed and canceled some AV fleets. I mean, you even look at the airlines, 80 to 90% drop in ticket sales. So there are very real shakeups in the market right now that will change things permanently. But what I fundamentally believe is that, similar to the comment I made earlier, if there's one thing that I see that remains the same through all of this, it's the urgency to market to get some of these solutions out there. And so if, for instance, passenger mobility is not just, it's people aren't as excited about getting in a small autonomous shuttle anymore and traveling, you know, where they need to go, or there's just not budget because of the economic crisis to go hard at getting the cost of an autonomous vehicle down, you'll see those same people in that same technology being transferred over into freight or into the future of drones as a tool for last mile delivery vehicles. I think you'll see an integration of healthcare and mobility in a way that either industry had never seen before. The ability to track within a split second whether someone's temperature goes up in a way that is respectful of data privacy. All of the energy we saw before March of this year around the future of transportation is still there. It's just being focused in different areas. And I think especially going back to the mobility of goods, and I keep hitting on this, our supply chains will regionalize. The PPE shortage will have long-term benefits. People will understand how important it is to still buy globally, but have your systems ready internally as well, or not internally, but locally, to make sure that things can get where they need to go. And I think mobility is going to play a big part in that.
Trevor Paul is Chief Mobility Officer in Michigan's Office of Future Mobility and Electrification. Trevor, thank you so much for talking to us.
This has been great. Thank you.